Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us here at KMXT 100.1 FM. It's your public radio station. Weather conditions at present, it is 29 degrees and fair here in Kodiak. We do have a special weather statement from the Weather Service. The National Weather Service says that there is a long-duration snowfall possible Saturday through early Sunday morning for Kodiak Island. A frontal system will develop late Friday night across the Gulf, bringing a couple inches of light snow to Kodiak City as temperatures stay below freezing on Saturday. By Saturday afternoon and evening, a potent low-pressure system will move south of Kodiak Island. Due to the complex nature of the pattern and temperatures hovering right at or just above freezing, there remains a high degree of uncertainty regarding snow amounts. Please stay tuned to your latest forecasts at weather.gov.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Pfizer sending out about 5 million COVID-19 vaccine doses a week and expects to more than double that number in the coming weeks in the United States. That from Chief Executive Albert Bourla, who hosted President Biden on a tour of the company's vaccine manufacturing facility in Michigan today.
We are on track to provide to the U.S. government a total of 120 million doses by the end of March and to reach 200 million doses released by the end of May.
Biden went to Kalamazoo after making his first appearance at two world gatherings as president of the United States. The G7 and Munich Security Conference were held virtually because of the pandemic. Among the pressing issues at the gathering, Iran. NPR's Franco Ordonez has more on that.
Speaking aboard Air Force One, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki told reporters that the Biden administration does not expect to lift sanctions on Iran ahead of any talks.
We don't anticipate taking additional steps, as in snapping back of sanctions, in advance of that. This is about having a conversation about the path forward.
The United States said on Thursday that it is ready to restart talks with Iran after the Trump administration left the Iran nuclear deal. It is not yet clear, though, whether Iran will agree. Foreign Minister Javad Zarif said on Twitter that Iran wants the United States to first lift sanctions imposed by former President Donald Trump. Franco Ordonez, NPR News, The White House.
A South Carolina law that bans most abortions is now suspended just one day after Governor Henry McMaster signed it. Today, a federal judge granted Planned Parenthood's request for a temporary restraining order. The first such legal fight of 2021, signaling a looming battle for the Biden administration and anti-abortion rights advocates who are looking to a now mostly conservative U.S. Supreme Court to overturn Roe v. Wade, the landmark decision that legalized abortion nationwide. More than 30 state legislatures have introduced legislation to crack down on voting rights after the 2020 election, according to the Brennan Center for Justice. That includes Georgia, where Republican lawmakers are pushing measures to limit early in-person and absentee voting. Georgia Public Broadcasting's Stephen Fowler has more.
A Brennan Center analysis finds 33 states have introduced more than 165 bills aimed at restricting voting, nearly five times as many as this time last year. They range from stricter voter ID for absentee ballots to eliminating automatic voter registration. In Georgia, the Republican-controlled State House and State Senate have several proposals working their way through committees. One would end no-excuse absentee voting, others would severely limit the use of drop boxes and cut back on in-person early voting, including a ban on Sunday voting that sees higher black turnout. The 2020 election saw record participation, driven by an increase in vote by mail because of the coronavirus pandemic. For NPR News, I'm Stephen Fowler in Atlanta.
This is NPR News.
A bit on the COVID-19 situation currently in the Kodiak Island borough. One new case, which was tested in December and was a close contact case, was discovered in a review of records. This has not been added to the current active case count. The current total case count is at 1,059 cases since the beginning of the pandemic. 10 cases are classified as active locally. The numbers for hospitalizations and deaths remain unchanged, 42 local hospitalizations and 5 deaths associated with COVID-19 to date. There are no active cases currently hospitalized in Kodiak. Board games, particularly tabletop games, were rising in popularity before the pandemic began. With families at home together and people looking for an escape from computer screens, it follows that board games would become even more popular. And Kodiak's own Grand Slam Toys and Games has been here to feed the need.
Board games can just, enhance that family time. give people a common goal or a common activity that they can sit around and just kind of reconnect with their family.
That's Zach Kaler, co-owner of Grand Slam. He says that the pandemic hasn't done much to slow the rising interest in board games.
I want to say about 5 or 6 years ago, there was a huge resurgence in what I term and what a lot of people term tabletop games. When you hear the phrase board games, you think of Monopoly or Sorry or Chutes and Ladders or any of those, you know, kind of classic board games. Tabletop games have exploded, and they've kind of shifted the focus from the simple roll the dice, move a piece, get to the end of the game kind of game, right? And they have exploded into role-playing games like Dungeons & Dragons. They've exploded into cooperative games where you sit around as a team and it's you as the players versus the game itself.
Classics like Dungeons & Dragons tend to hang around, but Kaler says there are some games in particular seeing greater interest in the pandemic.
Ironically, a game called Pandemic, in where you play as a group of scientists trying to find the cure for 4 diseases before it spreads across the planet.
Grand Slam Toys and Games is a small business, with many of the stresses that other small businesses in town have faced during this health crisis. Kodiak did a lot of its holiday shopping local last season, and it goes a long way for Kaler and business owners like him.
The only thing that I want to say is thank you to the community. The Kodiak community has just really rallied around all of the small businesses here. You know, before in normal times, it's easy to go on Amazon and buy what you want and, you know, get it shipped really quickly with kind of no thought to, you know what, maybe I could get that in town. But lately, there have been so many people that have, especially over the last Christmas season, that have vowed to shop local. And they did all of their Christmas shopping from all of our local businesses. And it's been really nice to see the community rally around us.
For those interested in finding a board game for their family at home, or perhaps a puzzle to amuse themselves with, you can reach them at grandslamtoys@gmail.com or in person at their store at 1420 Millbay Road, Suite A. The Alaska House of Representatives organized Thursday, but without either caucus able to claim most of the members. The committee membership was approved in a 22-17 vote. This allows the House to begin doing legislative business, 31 days into the session. But two of those who voted for the committees say they won't caucus with the coalition that has been the majority for the last 2 years. Anchorage Republican Representative Sarah Rasmussen says she won't caucus with either side. She says it will be unusual to not have a caucus with a majority of members.
I think it's kind of unprecedented, but it gives us an opportunity to have my voice. My district has a voice at the table, and I'm hoping that, you know, with compromise, we'll be able to get some good policy move forward.
Anchorage Democrat Garen Tarr also said she won't join a caucus. She was in the same caucus as the other Democrats in her first 8 years in the House. She wrote in a letter to House Speaker Louise Stutes that members became leaders by threatening to join the Republican caucus, and that joining Stutes' group would violate her commitment to, quote, honorable public service. Tarr was co-chair of the House Resources Committee for the last 4 years, but she was not named to the position again. Utqiagvik Independent Representative Josiah Aluxruok Patkutuk will be the chair. It's the first time the committee will not have co-chairs in 26 years. Stutes, a Kodiak Republican, says she's confident she will have the 21 votes needed for procedural matters necessary to the House functioning. She declined to say who the 21st vote would be.
I would rather talk people than numbers, and we are open. We are working to create a good bridge between House members. And so I'm hoping that as time goes by, we will all come together.
Stutes says most members in her caucus are aligned on not drawing more than is planned from the permanent fund's earnings reserve. While the majority over the last 2 years was committed to not do that, Stutes was less definitive. She says the House Finance Committee will have a major say in it.
I think that would probably like to be the hope of most people, whether it's within the realm of possibility. I guess we'll have to wait and see what finance comes up with.
Anchorage Democratic Representative Chris Tuck will be the majority leader, while Wasilla Republican Representative Kathy Tilton will be the minority leader. House committees are expected to start their work in the coming days. Governor Mike Dunleavy has told Senator Laura Reinbold his administration will no longer respond to her as the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Dunleavy wrote Reinbold a letter Thursday saying she has not upheld her oath of office. Reinbold has attacked his administration's response to the COVID-19 pandemic. Both Dunleavy and Reinbold are Republicans. In his letter, Dunleavy wrote, quote, "I will not continue to subject the public resources of the state of Alaska to the mockery of a charade disguised as public purpose," end quote. Reinbold has compared the state response to living under martial law. She's described state mandates in response to the pandemic as unconstitutional. She also has questioned the safety of the COVID-19 vaccines and whether all residents who have received the vaccines had consented to it. Reinbold criticized the administration's response to Health Commissioner Adam Crum's face in a Judiciary Committee hearing and had planned to call health officials back for more grilling. Dunleavy wrote in the letter that Reinbold had deceived Alaskans about the government health response and betrayed the public trust by repeating inaccurate information. He added that he never imposed martial law or forced vaccinations. He said the state has some of the best health outcomes with some of the least restrictive measures of any state. Dunleavy said Reinbold's constituents in Eagle River and Chugiak, quote, "are deprived of meaningful representation." A spokesman for the governor said he had nothing further to say on the matter. An aide to Reinbold said she wasn't available. She faces re-election next year. For the 30th year in a row, the Alaskan Association for Historic Preservation is compiling a list of the state's 10 most endangered properties. The association is soliciting property nominations from the public until April 10th. Nominations go through a selection committee, which ranks properties according to how endangered they are. What makes a property endangered? President Trish Neal says threats could be natural or man-made.
The Ascension Chapel of Our Lord in Carlick was rated as number one because it's sitting on the edge of a cliff, and we're holding our breath and hoping that we can get it moved away from the edge of the cliff before it falls in. We had two cultural sites involved with the Pebble Mine issue, and that was a concern too, because what they were planning on doing would impact those two cultural sites.
The Holy Assumption of the Virgin Mary Orthodox Church in Old Town Kenai has been on the list twice, in 1991 and 2009. Neal says the association has an agreement with the church and comes out to inspect the building every 5 years. It was just inspected last year as the church underwent renovations. Prior properties include the historic Soldotna Post Office and the Holy Transfiguration of Our Lord Russian Orthodox Church in Ninilchik. Neal says the distinction of the list can be an important one when groups are applying for restoration grants, but not all properties that make it onto the list can be saved. Last year's list featured the Jesse Lee Home, the historic Seward property that is currently being demolished after a multi-year custody battle.
That was a big lesson that we need to be out there knocking on more doors and letting people know that, you know, there is help. We don't want to see that happen again.
To submit a property to the list, visit the association's website at alaskapreservation.org. The 2021 list comes out in May, which is a National Historic Preservation Month. A federal lawsuit arguing that tribal members of the state's sole native reservation shouldn't need state permits to fish outside the reserve's marine boundaries was dismissed Wednesday. Eric Stone has more from Alaska's Energy Desk.
Metlakatla Indian Community sued Governor Mike Dunleavy's administration last year. Lawyers for the tribe said the 1891 federal law that established the Annette Islands Reserve was intended to create a self-sustaining community, and that the right to fish in waters within a day's travel of the reserve was an essential part of that. Metlakatla argued that the state's commercial fishing regulations thus shouldn't apply to tribal members fishing in the southern panhandle. Attorneys for the state argued that Congress never intended to grant Metlakatla the fishing rights the tribe claimed. State lawyers also pointed to the tribe's unique history. In 1887, 4 years before the reservation was established, some 820 Tsimshian people emigrated over the Canadian border from their previous home in Metlakatla, British Columbia. And in a 19-page order, U.S. District Court Judge John Sedwick agreed. Sedgwick writes that while some courts have found that other tribes had implied fishing rights, the circumstances in those cases were very different. The longtime federal judge writes that Congress didn't create the Annette Islands Reserve as compensation for the tribe's ceding territory. The tribe's emigration from Canada 4 years before meant there was no land to give up and there were no treaties to negotiate. Instead, Sedgwick says the congressional record shows that 19th century lawmakers intended the reserve to serve as a self-sufficient Christian Alaska Native community. But Sedgwick says the fact that Congress intended to create a self-sustaining community isn't enough to show that lawmakers intended to grant off-reservation fishing rights. Chris Lundberg, one of Metlakatla's attorneys, declined to speak on tape but told Alaska's Energy Desk that he's disappointed in the decision and plans to appeal. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Eric Stone in Ketchikan.
Musher Dallas Seavey is returning to the Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race. It's his first Iditarod since race officials announced in 2017 that some of his dogs tested positive for a prohibited pain reliever. The officials later cleared the full-time champion of any wrongdoing, the four-time champion of any wrongdoing. Alaska Public Media's Tegan Hanlon reports that Seavey says he's coming back to the Iditarod with a different perspective.
Dallas Seavey is walking through his dog yard on a snowy afternoon in Talkeetna.
I know, buddy. You're so wiggly.
Seavey's property spans about 100 acres, and he has 110 sled dogs here. The 33-year-old musher is still narrowing down which ones he'll bring on this year's race.
There's probably five or six that I definitely want to have with me. And beyond that, just fill out the roster with even a random pick. It would be a really, really phenomenal dog team.
This will be Seavey's 12th Iditarod. He ran his first at age 18. At 25, he became the race's youngest champion. Then he won the race again and again and again, earning a reputation as a focused, deliberate, and competitive musher.
This is 29-year-old Dallas Seavey winning his third consecutive Iditarod championship.
But Seavey's streak of success screeched to a halt in 2017. A month after placing second in that year's Iditarod, Seavey got a call from the race marshal, who told him that several of his dogs had tested positive for a prohibited painkiller after they crossed the finish line in Nome.
And that set off, literally, I would say, without a doubt, the most stressful year of my life, filled with more challenges than at times I thought I was capable of handling.
Over the next year, there were lawyers and PR firms and a flurry of statements to reporters as Seavey maintained that he did not give the drug tramadol to his dogs. He says the accusations were painful. It felt like they took away from all that his dogs had accomplished and tarnished a key piece of his identity.
At some point, it felt like everything that I thought that I was, you know, peripherally, externally being torn apart.
Then in the winter of 2018 came an apology from the Iditarod board. It issued a statement saying it did not believe Seavey had anything to do with, quote, the events that led up to the positive test. Seavey had already skipped that year's Iditarod and then skipped two more. He went to Norway twice to race.
I kind of needed a break from the Iditarod, but I wasn't in a place that I wanted to not be racing dogs competitively. And then last year, I took the year off entirely.
Seavey says he needed time to regroup. He was going through a divorce and finishing the move to Talkeetna, where he also runs a sled dog tourism business. Seavey says he feels like he's now ready to return to the Iditarod with a new perspective. He cares a little less about what people are saying about him. And he says,
I feel like I grew as a person through it all, definitely became more resilient.
And he says he never stopped loving the Iditarod. The event, the fans, the volunteers, the communities along the trail. It's a race his family's life has revolved around for so long. His grandfather competed in the first Iditarod, and his dad, Mitch, has won the race three times.
In a way, it's coming home for me, right? This is where I belong, racing the Iditarod.
Back in his dog yard, Seavey is quick to rattle off names, lineages, and personality traits. There's Gamble, Bishop, North, and there's Prophet, a lively lead dog that doesn't always play well with others.
And so, I'm pretty stoked to have him on my team, but this will be our first Iditarod, huh, bud? Hopefully it's going to be a good one.
Seavey says this year they're coming to race. In Anchorage, I'm Tegan Hanlon.
Prophet, wake up, bud.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. The state aims to change regulations for using water in salmon streams. More after this.
Halibut and black cod buyers and sellers, simplify your sales online from one location at the Seafood Auction. Visit seafoodauction.net.
The state of Alaska wants to change the rules that regulate the use of water in salmon streams. A mid-January letter to Alaskans from the Department of Natural Resources said the changes are needed to provide clarity and consistency in the Division of Mining, Land, and Waters processes. It also invites Alaskans to comment. Lindsay Bloom is a campaign strategist for Salmon State based in Juneau. She agrees that the rules need more clarity.
The problem is that they're proposing to roll the regulations back in just the absolute opposite direction and create a lot more red tape and hoops for Alaskans who want to reserve water in streams for fish to have to jump through to possibly ever achieve that.
Bloom points out that for decades, water rights advocates have proposed a simple solution, a blanket rule that says a reasonable amount of water will automatically be reserved for fish. The onus would fall to developers to study the hydrology of a water system to prove their project would cause no harm.
Unfortunately, the Dunleavy administration is choosing to take it in the opposite direction and make it very, very difficult to reserve the water for fish. What they're saying is the assumption is that there are no fish there and that the fish don't need the water. And if Alaskans want that water to stay in the stream for fish, you have to prove it with up to 5 years of specific hydrological data, make an application to the state.
The Alaska Miners Association blamed anti-development entities for using in-stream flow reservations to stop project. They said the solution is to, quote, place an immediate moratorium on processing applications and pursue regulatory changes to ensure that only state agencies can hold reservations of state water. Public comments to DNR are accepted through February 26th. Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
KMXT's Island Messenger, supported in part by the Kodiak Daily Mirror, your hometown newspaper since 1940. Now online at www.kodiakdailymirror.com.
Good afternoon. It is your Island Messenger for the 19th of February of this year of 2021. It is Friday today. The sun rose today at 8:29 a.m. It will set again at 6:20 p.m. The sunrise tomorrow will be 8:26 a.m. That brings us to 9 hours and 50 minutes of daylight, a gain of 4 minutes and 53 seconds, with a record high temperature of 45 degrees in 1945, and a record low of 0 in 1975. Weather at present, it is 29 degrees and fair here in Kodiak. For this afternoon, sunny with a high near 30, a west wind of 15 to 20 miles per hour, becoming south 5 to 10 miles per hour. Winds could gust as high as 30 miles per hour. For tonight, snow likely mainly after 4 a.m., increasing clouds with a low around 22, a south wind of 5 to 10 miles per hour becoming north after midnight, chance of precipitation is 70%, new snow accumulation of less than 1 inch possible. Saturday, snow with a high near 36, a north wind of 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts as high as 20 miles per hour, chance of precipitation is 90%, new snow accumulation of 1 to 2 inches possible. Saturday night, snow before 10 p.m., then snow showers between 10 p.m. and 4 a.m., then a chance of snow after 4 a.m. A low around 25, a northeast wind of 20 to 25 miles per hour becoming northwest, 15 to 20 miles per hour after midnight. Chance of precipitation is 90%. For Sunday, a 50% chance of snow before 7 a.m., mostly cloudy with a high near 34, a west wind of 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts as high as 20 miles per hour. And Sunday night, partly cloudy with a low around 19, a west wind of 10 to 15 miles per hour increasing to 15 to 20 miles per hour after midnight. Winds could gust as high as 30 miles per hour. And at this point, I should read a special weather statement we've gotten from the National Weather Service office. A long-duration snowfall possible Saturday through early Sunday morning for Kodiak Island. A frontal system will develop late Friday night across the Gulf, bringing a couple inches of light snow to Kodiak City as temperatures stay below freezing on Saturday. By Saturday afternoon and evening, a potent low-pressure system will move south of Kodiak Island. Due to the complex nature of the pattern and temperatures hovering right at or just above freezing, there remains a high degree of uncertainty regarding snow amounts. Please stay tuned to your latest forecasts at weather.gov/Anchorage, or right here on KMXD 100.1 FM. Chiniac Bay and Marmot Bay weather. We have a gale, a small craft advisory today in Chiniac Bay. For today, northwest winds of 30 knots, becoming southwest 20 knots in the afternoon. Seas to 4 feet with freezing spray. For tonight, north wind of 10 knots, becoming northeast 15 knots after midnight. Seas to 3 feet, freezing spray and snow. Saturday, a north wind of 20 knots, seas to 3 feet, building to 6 feet in the afternoon, freezing spray and snow. And Saturday night, north wind of 30 knots, seas to 10 feet. For Marmot Bay, gale warning today. Today, a west wind of 35 knots, diminishing to 25 knots in the afternoon, seas to 6 feet, subsiding to 3 feet in the afternoon with freezing spray. Tonight, a north wind of 10 knots, increasing to 15 knots after midnight, seas to 4 feet. Saturday, a northeast wind of 20 knots, seas to 3 feet, building to 6 feet in the afternoon with snow. And Saturday night, a north wind of 30 knots, seas to 11 feet. Synopsis for the North Gulf Coast and Kodiak Island waters of Cook Inlet. A 963 millibar low, 165 nm west of Sitka, moves to 170 nautical miles north of Sitka at 987 millibars and inland for Friday afternoon. A front enters the southwest Gulf Friday night and stretches across the central Gulf through Saturday afternoon. The Kodiak Emergency Operations Center, along with the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services and community partners, will be providing a second dose COVID-19 vaccine clinic on Friday, February 19th of this year of 2021 on Marine Way in the Harbormaster parking lot. That is right now. The event will be limited to those who received their first dose of the COVID-19 vaccine through the Kodiak Community Vaccine Clinic event hosted at the Harbormaster parking lot on January 29th of 2021. If you received your first dose through this event and have questions regarding your second dose, please contact Kodiak Public Health Center at 907-486-3319. Today, the Kodiak EOC and, well, not today, the Kodiak EOC and Alaska Department of Health and Social Services also announced a new first dose COVID-19 point of dispensation vaccine clinic that will be taking place tomorrow, February 20th. There will be approximately 300 appointments available for vaccinations on Saturday, February 20th of 2021, from 9 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. by appointment only. The vaccination clinic will be located on Marine Way in the Harbormaster parking lot, with parking available on the spit at Oscar's Dock. Registration is now open for this event, and to my best awareness, they still have quite a few spots available. To schedule an appointment, please register online at covidvax.alaska.gov. If you need assistance scheduling or making an appointment, please leave a message at 907-646-3322 and someone will call you back to help schedule your appointment.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.
KMXT is supported in part by Orion's Mountain Sports, featuring equipment, clothing, and footwear for your outdoor lifestyle. Orion's Mountain Sports, located at 1247 Mill Bay Road. Hello, Kodiak, and welcome to the February 19th edition of Island Byways. I'm Pam Foreman. Boy, it sure has felt like spring lately, hasn't it? Even though that wind still brings a bite to the air, and even though mornings are still cold, and we have snow predicted for the weekend, it feels springish. Or maybe it's just me. The days of sunshine certainly help with the illusion, and the length of daylight is a welcome harbinger of spring. As of today, we're at about 9 hours and 50 minutes of daylight. We're gaining just a few seconds shy of 5 minutes a day of daylight, 35 minutes a week. By the end of February, we'll have gained another 44 minutes for a total of 10 hours and 34 minutes of daylight. By the end of March, we're at over 13 hours. I've lived in Alaska for almost 40 years now, and this accelerated daylight gain never ceases to amaze me. The point is, just as we are all getting more than a little stir-crazy, there's literally light at the end of the tunnel. I hope you take the time to get out and enjoy it. Those lengthening daylight hours means shrinking night hours, but there's still plenty to get out and enjoy in terms of stargazing. Check out Mars hanging out near the moon tonight after twilight ends. And the brightest star in our skies is Sirius, which is to the lower left of Orion in the southeastern sky early in the evening. Sirius is a bright blue star that's actually 25 times more luminous than the sun, and about twice its size. But it's a lot further away from us, so it's just a very bright and beautiful star. So whether you want to get out and play in the daylight or go stargazing at night, this is just about the perfect time to do so. Hope you get out and do both. And that's it for Island Byways this week. Have fun and stay safe out there. Thanks for listening.